This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Earlier this year, a group of young climate activists, children mostly, showed up at Senator Dianne Feinstein's office, and they were there to talk about the Green New Deal. And suddenly, things got pretty testy.
The government is supposed to be for the people and by the people and all
for the people. You know what's interesting about this group is I've been doing this for 30 years. You come in here and you say it has to be my way or the highway. I don't respond to that.
Those activists who ticked off Senator Feinstein were part of the Sunrise Movement. Apart from a membership that's very young, the Sunrise Movement sounds pretty different from the big environmental groups like the Sierra Club, say. Rather than talking about the fate of polar bears or coral reefs, they tend to frame the issue in these terms. We're the ones who are going to suffer if we don't do something really fast.
Even though the idea of the Green New Deal has been around for at least a decade, it's really taken on legs because of the Sunrise Movement.
Here's Eliza Griswold, a staff writer who's just won the Pulitzer Prize.
It was really fascinating during the midterms to get to watch what impact the young people had, particularly in Pennsylvania, that I was covering the swing state, and looking at them on the ground, just the number of doors they knocked was incredibly inspiring.
Eliza talked recently with Varshini Prakash, the 25-year-old co-founder of the Sunrise Movement.
One of the things that I find so exciting about both Sunrise and the Green New Deal is this, the idea of climate justice, that finally environmental justice and the climate change movement are getting on the same page.
Well, part of how I think about this is if we look at the last, you know, few decades of climate movement activity and of climate policy, just focusing on the climate alone has not been a winning strategy. One of the reasons why I think the Green New Deal actually has a chance at building this winning coalition of lots of different diverse constituencies is that it's fundamentally about tying climate action to people's basic interests, right? Like jobs and the economy and health and healthcare. It includes a 10-year economic mobilization to transform every part of our economy and society to stop the climate crisis and get us off of fossil fuels. The second piece of it is that we ought to guarantee a job to every person who wants or needs one doing the critical work of avoiding climate catastrophe. And so people might immediately balk at a word like decarbonization or climate change or something like that, but everyone cares about access to clean air and clean water. Everybody cares about having access to a good, high-paying job and being able to support their family.
Okay, so that's the plan on addressing communities and garnering community support. How do you plan to get such an ambitious agenda through Congress?
Yes, the path to power here, or to victory. I think about this in a few different ways. First of all, of course, we need to replace Trump. We need to elect pro-climate action, pro-good jobs majorities into the House and the Senate. At the same time, we need to be building big, robust, massive movements that include millions of people for social change to be keeping up the pressure on the outside. So I think the biggest thing that we need to ensure is that we are setting ourselves up so that 2 years from now, when the political conditions are ripe, we have built the political will and we have built also the public consensus, the public support, so that we can pass these policies when the window of opportunity arises. And it's going to be very similar to how FDR's New Deal occurred as well. FDR didn't get up and say, you know, we have a New Deal policy that's 10,000 pages long and we're going to pass it in one fell swoop. He sort of embraced what he called bold experimentation over a decade of time, where he threw dozens and dozens of policies at the wall and saw what stuck. And I think we need to embrace this experimentation as well in our politics today and do whatever it takes to really pass the policies that are going to prevent us from going over this tipping point that we are on the verge of.
Okay, Varshini, what do you say to criticism like, how are you going to manage decarbonization in this particular time frame when there is no carbon-free option for, say, jet fuel? When people bear down on some of the specifics and say these are great goals, mm-hmm. but they are impossible technologically to mm-hmm. achieve in this time. What's your response to that?
I mean, there have been lots of people telling us that we are radical, that we are unrealistic, that we're naive. We've heard it all at this point. I don't know if we can completely decarbonize our economy in the next 10 years. I don't know if we can eliminate all warming emissions, but we have done incredible things in this nation's history before. We have an amazing track record. You know, we are facing this grave existential threat, a humanitarian crisis of epic proportions. Scientists are telling us there will be, you know, 150 million climate refugees by mid-century. 150 million. All of our coral reefs will be gone. Hundreds of millions of premature deaths from pollution. We don't have a choice but to strive. And I think in striving, we can open up all sorts of political opportunities and perhaps technological opportunities than we could have ever before.
Recently, the AFL-CIO came out against the Green New Deal, saying that it could cause, quote, I think, immediate harm to millions of union workers. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a complicated issue. And I don't think it's an issue that's going to be completely solved in mere days or weeks. I do believe that the Green New Deal has the greatest chance of actually bringing both labor and enviros and businesses and more farmers and ranchers, indigenous communities to the table, because I think it's the first time that we have articulated a vision to stop climate change that's actually rooted in a just transition, in justice and equity, and it is also about economic revitalization. Many of these unions actually represent working families and communities of color that are already experiencing the impacts of climate change. I was talking to the head of one major union the other day who said that over 70,000 of their union workers had been affected by Hurricanes Harvey and Florence, and that they had to shell out hundreds of thousands of dollars to support these individuals. So this is hurting union members right now, and a lot of people understand that. Many people are very much on the same page about the need to do something about it. And now we need to actually have communication with both not just leaders at the top, but at the grassroots as well, to bring the majority of folks along.
Do you support primary campaigns against Democrats who don't back the Green Deal?
Yeah, we will. Definitely.
So the Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe called the Green New Deal the gift that keeps on giving. How concerned are you that Republicans are going to use policies to address climate as a bludgeon against Democrats?
I'm not that concerned, frankly. We're seeing that The Green New Deal has absolutely skyrocketed into the public conversation and the nation's discourse over the last 5 months. What used to be a relatively niche policy priority is now becoming the number one most popular policy amongst Democratic 2020 caucus goers. And even majorities of Republicans, even conservative Republicans, who are very much in support of things like investments in sustainable agriculture and renewable energy, supporting energy efficiency programs, and interested in the job creation component of the Green New Deal as well. So I think, you know, Republicans will continue to use this to bash whomever, but frankly, they're the ones who end up looking pretty ludicrous in the end.
But one of the talking points for Green New Deal opponents is this: they're going to take away our hamburgers, which obviously you've heard, I'm sure. How do you deal with people who belong to an opposition that is really hostile, that isn't engaging in the debate in a substantive way? How do you begin to reach those people?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I will say I don't think you can reach everybody. I think the key is to make sure that some of these key individuals who sort of passively support action on climate or support these policies, like, for example, there are a lot of farmers and ranchers in the Heartland and in the Midwest and places that you see this terrible rhetoric around, you know, we're going to kill your cows and take your hamburgers and all of that manifesting most strongly. A lot of those folks are really interested in investments in sustainable agriculture and improving livelihoods for farmers and ranchers and ensuring that people have access to good food. But in large part, the Democratic Party and the climate movement writ large has failed to actually go out and talk to these people on the ground. And that's like the first thing that our movement is trying to do and needs to do to win on this moving forward.
Varshini Prakash is co-founder of the Sunrise Movement, and she spoke with The New Yorker's Eliza Griswold.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.